Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. I'm Alexandria Leatherberry, back to discuss community solutions to Black health epidemics. Last episode, we focused on the historical relevance of spirituality to mental health. Today, we are here to continue the discussion going beyond the physical body. We are here to talk about the environments and structures that shape our health outcomes. As I mentioned before, my journey into public health has been wide-ranging. Beginning as a home health aide in 2016 to now serving as a health communication specialist in the Genesee County Prevention Coalition. Experiencing both the service and provider side has given me a deeper understanding of how care is delivered and where gaps still exist. Social determinants of health have become an essential framework for understanding how factors like housing and economic stability directly impact well-being. Today, I want to discuss what it looks like to address health at its roots and how policy, housing, and community investment intersect with public health outcomes. To help me open up this conversation, I'm joined here today by Ms. Amelia Givens. She is with Reinvest Toledo, as well as Alexandria Thomas at Neighborhood Properties Incorporated. And we also have WGT's own Marcus Harrison to help join us today. He's going to talk about some special things later on. In the last episode, we addressed how we could shift the institutional stigma around religion and religious leadership to open up opportunities for integrated care that will promote mental wellness. We are now shifting our focus to the opportunities of investment into the people within these communities and that impact on their neighbors' well-being. Leadership usually shows up when there is a need. And Alexandria Thomas has been actively filling that need here in Toledo and the neighborhoods, but as a Cleveland native, correct?
I am. Oh, I'm impressed. Yes. I don't get asked that a lot. That's great.
Yes. So, yeah. So I find that so interesting to find about you. And again, I want to thank you all guys for being here today. Welcome to A Moment of Truth. So thank you again.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So, Alexandra, I kind of want to start with that, is that you're a Cleveland native and you're here doing the work in Toledo. Mm-hmm. How is that for you, being here and doing the work away from kind of where you grew up?
You know, at first it was quite a challenge. I came here to finish my education. So I came here to the University of Toledo because I had an opportunity that I just could not pass up. So I was an adult learner at that point and felt Toledo was the best place for me to finish my education. But I think when I came here and I learned, I found my way in the community and I found my way in my career. So I'm really proud to say Toledo, you know, Cleveland is where I'm from and Cleveland is home, but Toledo is where I found my way. Mm-hmm. And the differences in the communities were, it was a bit of an adjustment for me. But now I'm proud of what I do here, and while Cleveland is home, Toledo is where I'm gonna be, you know, and Toledo is where I've established myself, and it's where I want to commit my time in the community.
Yes,
I love that question. Thank you so much.
Awesome,
made my day.
Yes, and I love that you said committing your time to the community and things like that. It actually brings up a quote I actually remember from Miss Amelia here. I got familiar with her last year at the SG Rail Firefly Gala. Shout out to our D9 brother and sister. So I am a member now 3 years in with Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. I was proud to hear that was a quote that you said that you have committed your lifehood to servicing your community. And if you want to just share a little bit and what brought that about for you as far as, like, you know, what that commitment sparked that commitment for you.
Thank you for that question. My reality is I've spent over 2 decades doing this work of community. And at the tender age of 55, I decided to start my own business because what I realized is I needed my own platform in which to be able to be to speak freely and frankly about the needs and the gaps in our community. And so the transition from working for someone to tell their story to owning my own business so that I can tell the community story is is what my commitment is about. That's what I was speaking about. Understanding there's a huge gap for leadership to develop in this community, especially the next wave of leadership. And so the Sandbox, my organization, was created to be that platform to develop the next wave of leadership.
Marcus is definitely a long-term storyteller as well here in the community. Yeah. And we know that, like you said, helps us tell those narratives and things like that. Marcus, can you share a little bit with us and what that looked like and you bringing that into your career?
I mean, storytelling is something, it's interesting you bring that up. Storytelling is something I started in second grade that I didn't even know I really had a knack for. I did this assignment, and I was telling my mom this the other day, I did this assignment at school in second grade where we had to write this book. It was just some assignment or whatever. And my mom kept that forever. And I'm just like, why do you keep this? You know, crazy as it sounds, storytelling has been part of my life, you know, telling the stories of all kinds of people, you know, that live, work, and play in Northwest Ohio. So my background is in public media. You know, I started my career here at WGTE 20-something years ago, I think 21 years ago. And I'm actually on my second tour, you know, coming back as director of marketing and communications. But storytelling has been a huge part of my career, something that I enjoy and is something that's needed, you know, I think in any community for people to understand what makes that community tick, understanding the stories of the people that live, work, and play in that community. Storytelling has always been inspirational to me to be part of that process. I like research, which sounds weird, but, you know, to some people, I like being a documentary filmmaker. I like going into a hole for a little bit and finding out all this information about people and things and places and then coming out with this end product. You know, I love looking at old pictures and things like that. So I really love that process, you know, and it's something that I enjoy doing. I don't know. Storytelling is just one of those necessary things. You know, I think we've all been inspired by stories our whole lives. You know, when you're sitting around talking to family and they're like, oh, so, you know, old Uncle so-and-so, and he did this, and Grandpa so-and-so, they did this, and Grandma, you remember she used to make, you know, it's those stories that bind all of us, really.
There's definitely like a lost nostalgia sometimes in just sitting in Grandma's living room and her telling you, you know, all the like, you know, just family stories. But I definitely resonate in what you said about just, I don't know, I think because I started with you at WBGU-TV on BGSU's campus. And then, you know, I didn't like, you know, see... I saw that face.
Go Rockets.
AZZ.
We don't know about that.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
Talons up. No. Okay. But I didn't really get, you know, I guess I didn't see my purpose in really doing it then. So it was kind of like, oh, this is cool, but how am I gonna make some money? You know? And that was like my thought. And then, you know, you get out in the world and you start seeing what really matters, right? Mm-hmm. And then how, you know, storytelling can help communicate that in ways that is just relatable and digestible and things like that. And I like what you said, especially about the research process of it. I'm getting to learn so much, you know, just about in our community, even in this process of, you know, being able to research who we're bringing on as guests and things like that. In doing research on Alexandria, you know, I learned a lot in what you have been able to do in the support of housing space as well as mental health. Mm-hmm. Can you just share a little bit about that? It is just wherever you feel comfortable starting.
Sure. In my current role, I'm the Director of Community Relations and Development for Neighborhood Properties. And so in my love for storytelling, I found a way to combine what's needed in our community, what's needed with our organization in housing individuals, and finding a way to tell that story so that we can gain support for our necessary work. But previous to that, my focus was in the mental health space. So community mental health, the Wellness and Recovery Center, which is right around the corner from here, was a program that I started in 2018 with the support of both the organization and the Mental Health and Recovery Services Board of Lucas County. And that was a really essential resource to mental health prevention, crisis prevention. So we're talking about hospitalization prevention, working with individuals before a mental health crisis, was severe enough that hospitalization was necessary, potentially jail or engagement with law enforcement. And we went on to create the Lucas County Emotional Support Line as well. That actually came about in 2020. So we opened our doors in 2018. And then in 2020, unfortunately, we did have to close due to the pandemic. And so we were able to pivot with support again from the Mental Health and Recovery Services Board, tax dollars, local tax dollars as well. We were able to create that emotional support line for people to call in that is still active now. That individuals can call into, and if they're just having a difficult day or having a hard time and they need somebody to talk to. And it also, at the time, getting therapy, and there were wait lists for people to receive mental health services. And so we solved that gap and allowed people to have an outlet and a way to talk while they were waiting to get into their therapy appointments or potentially receive medications. So that was kind of how I started. And now transitioned into doing the development work for all of Neighborhood Properties, which is a housing agency for individuals who are unhoused living with mental illness and substance use disorder.
I'm so glad you've been able to just transfer your skills and talents into something that is really purposeful. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into how did you gain that necessary support in your storytelling? Who are you working with at those times, and what did you make sure to focus on and have that clarity on?
When the Wellness and Recovery Center was created, we were in the mud. We really were. The wellness center model is considered respite care, emotional and mental health respite care. And we, at the time, our community was really transforming the way that we view mental health crisis services. And so we had a traditional model of care in our community. If you were experiencing a mental crisis, you go to the ER. People think, I go to the ER. I call 911 and I go to the ER. And there should really a good robust system of mental health care should really have all sorts of options that are available to someone, so that those essential resources like 911 and the ER are used for people that are having medical emergencies. So the Wellness Center was a creation at that time, but our entire system really needed to renew the way that we view mental health care. And so storytelling came in for me because I really had to get out into the community, do the footwork of door to door, going to these providers, going to these therapists, to these mental health community behavioral health agencies, and telling them what we do and why we should be used and why the community needs to come to us first, because it saves dollars at the end of the day. Our service, if we're effectively used, is much cheaper than the cost of someone being in a jail or someone in a hospital bed. But we had to teach people what we were, why it was important, and why we needed to be used. And so I really had to learn how to tell that story. And I did it for quite a long time. And the local support from the mental health board was essential. They had to invest not only their time, but their commitment, because traditionally it does take new programs quite a long time to show effectiveness. And so we're having to show that we're hitting our outcomes. We had years of not hitting our outcomes and continuing to be at the table and requesting the investment continue until we were able to then hit those outcomes and show that this program is successful. That required investment from our community, from our local leaders, the investment from other agencies that were willing to use us. So we needed support from everyone in order to show that our work can be successful and it can change things in the community. And I think being able to do that for as long as I did, it was the perfect transition for me to come into my role, where now my focus is housing. I do still work with the Wellness and Recovery Center because they have development needs as well and funding needs as well. But my overarching role and the highest priority and the highest need at the moment is what's happening in our area when it comes to housing.
Just curious, how long did it take you to start seeing those outcomes?
Oh, my goodness. I want to say at the 3-year mark, I was able to really see the community. The commitment from the community was immediate, from the Mental Health Board, from the Board of Trustees, and from other leaders who support mental health in the community. That was immediate. I mean, our work is... Once you hear the story of the Wellness Center and what it can do, it just kind of solved that problem for us. But the effectiveness I want to say it took about three to five years, really, mm-hmm. to show that we're able to hit our outcomes, which in the when you're talking about grant dollars and who gets what dollars in the community, outcomes are key. You have mm-hmm. to hit those outcomes. You have to show the effectiveness so that you could be worth the money. But
yeah, absolutely.
I want to say it took 3 to 5 years or so.
Yeah, I think that's something, like, I like that you bring dollars into the conversation, because, mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to effectiveness, because I think sometimes we underestimate, like, nonprofit kind of gets tied with charity. Yeah. And it's like, you're still talking to investors. Like, it still has to make, good business
sense.
And
yes.
things like that. Ms. Amelia, I just want to ask you, in hearing about that legwork and things like that, I'm sure you have had a similar journey in starting your business and things like that. Could you share a little bit about, what that legwork looked like for you?
Well, I think from a business perspective, we transitioned. My company was offered a contract to create Reinvest Toledo. Reinvest started out as a volunteer organization in 2015. So in 2020, I was asked to come on board to provide leadership. And so the journey started happening right before COVID, right? So we've been in existence for over 6 years. And so I think that Reinvest Toledo is the example of what I can do based on my experience as a business owner and how to engage community, which I will babble about later, I promise. But I'm yes. certainly excited about sharing that story. So thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. We are definitely going to get into that in our next segment. I want to thank you, Marcus, Amelia, and Alexandria, for being here with me today. And those who are listening, we thank you as well. So hang in there with us. Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. I'm Alexandra Leatherberry, and as we continue today's conversation, we're shifting from understanding the impact of our environments to asking a deeper question on who is responsible for shaping them. Who gets to lead that change? Because community development doesn't just happen through policy, it's happening through people. In this next segment, we're expanding that conversation with someone who has been at the forefront of neighborhood reinvestment and capacity building here in Toledo. I'm excited to welcome Amelia Gibbons again, as well as Marcus Harrison and Alexandria back with us here. Thank you guys for staying with me.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Amelia, you are obviously the lead here of Reinvest Toledo. And we talked a little bit about in the last segment how you chose to commit your life to your journey. So I just wanted to go back to, your journey and that commitment and talk about some of the things of, how you have been impacting our youth through your work.
So we'll talk primarily about Reinvest Toledo. Mm-hmm. Reinvest Toledo, or RT, as you'll hear me say time and time again, is a coalition that affects positive change in LMI communities through neighborhood leadership development. That is our purpose. That's our mission. We believe that the RT platform is a necessary one because it closes a gap, and the gap being that there are the current leaders, past leaders, and then there are the leaders that are coming, and there's no place for them to meet. We'll talk about intergenerational leadership, I hope, later on, in this podcast. But RT provides that space for leaders who are in the community to garner the skills necessary to elevate the voices of the communities that they serve. In our community, historically, there has been this practice, if you will, of decision makers approaching community as an afterthought, after decisions have been made, and they did not take into consideration those who they're creating these opportunities for. There's a quote that I always like to share, and it simply says that the people closest to the challenges are closest to the solutions. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is the issue in communities, because we don't talk to the people who are closest to the challenges. Yes. Mm-hmm. But they are the ones who absolutely can help you find a solution that is viable and sustainable. So our young leaders, they're the voices of the future. I mean, the reality of it is we're leaving them a hot mess, mm-hmm. right? And it is our responsibility to help prepare them now. Mm-hmm. Not when we're done and there's nothing else we can do. Our role is to bring them alongside us now so that they are ready when we move out of the way. So, you know, we oftentimes talk about mentorship. Mentorship should not just be an opportunity of support. Mentorship should actually be a structure that's in place that will promote sustainability for those that you mentor, right? And with our young leaders, they are looking for those opportunities to practice leadership in a safe space. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you know, you don't, if you're teaching a child to walk, you try to make the room safe, but you're there like trying to catch them if they fall. But sometimes you gotta let them fall, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but it's a safe space in which to let them fall. And so Reinvest is that platform for young leaders to safely fall, but we are there to support them as they figure out how to do this thing called leadership in a way so they can become effective and move the needle in their communities. Earlier in the segment, we talked about storytelling. How often does other individuals take the mic and define the stories, right? They put the people in front of the camera and tell their version of the story, but they never ask them to speak and tell them, like, this is the solution, hear me. I'm not the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, grassroots, when you say grassroots in Toledo, you don't think power. You don't. You think, oh, we need to help. Hmm. And that is not true. Margaret Mead said when change happened, it was because one group of concerned people made that change happen, a small group of concerned people, not systems.
Absolutely. Right? I think, you know, the grassroots is really where the magic is happening. And to the point of the quote that you said, that those closest to the challenges are closest to the solutions. That's really powerful. I like that.
That's a gem.
Yes.
I'm taking gems.
I'm taking that with my in my pocket. You mentioned effective leadership. How would you define effective leadership?
For me, effective leadership is leadership that actually you can set the goal and you can figure out the journey in which you accomplish it, right? But we are oftentimes measured as effective leaders by numbers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything that glitters is not gold. And unfortunately, in many cultures, many cities and communities, that's how they matter. Oh, 12,000 people showed up. They must be smart people, right? 12,000 people. They got 12,000 people in the room. That means they're effective. No, not necessarily, right? Effectiveness is about change, if that's what you're about. And, you know, leadership cannot be defined by how many people you can get to show up, right? Or dollars and cents, in my opinion. And I see with Reinvest that we do have leadership is effective, because now we're doing Raise Voices, where people are advocating and creating housing tenant associations. You know, that's our goal, right, in the mm-hmm. next 2 years, to make that happen. We're doing the Power Tool, where people are understanding the power of their vote, and we're focusing on young leaders to teach them how to take that creativity and tie it to civic engagement, which we know in our communities it's always been that tie to creativity and civic engagement that has raised the needle on social justice issues, whether we do it through music, we do it through visual arts, or whatever the case may be. So our T's, we are taking what we know to be our truth, right? Mm-hmm. And we are giving our young leaders room in which to bring their truth to the table and do it in a way that works for them, as opposed to the old heads, as we call them, you know, affectionately telling them, well, you haven't paid your dues, or you can't show up in this room, you know, well, okay, right? But again, our young people are closest to this, to the problem, because they're being impacted,
and
they have the solutions, mm-hmm. but we're not mm-hmm. listening because we're negating them. Because,
yes, they see things that we may not see. And I as you said, spoke on, you know, not equating necessarily effectiveness to numbers, you know, it makes me also think of just the question of, you know, how do you maintain that integrity? And I would ask that to all of you guys, and how you maintain that integrity, but also knowing that you have to meet those number outcomes, right, to, you know, receive those grants and that funding and things like that. What, do you guys kind of carry with you to kind of find that balance?
It is a challenge. Sometimes the outcomes are not set by us. And while we are simultaneously having to get creative with how we meet them, we also still have to advocate for our work and what we know. And we have to make sure that we are represented. That I loved you essentially were talking about representation. We have to make sure that we remind individuals that we're working for these voices. Like there's representation here, and we're here and we're speaking and we're advocating for people that may not be at the table with us right now, but need to be at the table with us to talk about how we, what outcomes are need to be set, why they're important, why they need to change. You're talking about something that's an age old challenge of what our outcomes are, but what the impact is, what the impact should be, and making sure that leaders in our community continue to keep up with those things and listen to the voices in the community that know those solutions and make sure that they match and they align.
I was just going to say, I'm just piggybacking, and I don't even know if this is the original question that you even just asked, but I'm just piggybacking off of both of you guys had beautiful statements that you said, but I think a lot of it has to do with, I'm piggybacking off Alexandria, being at the table.
Yeah.
Making sure those people that are, you know, affected by these things are at the table, you know, and that's really the core of what we're talking about here today. And a lot of times they aren't, mm-hmm. you know, they're considered after the fact when something has already been done. Oh, maybe we should talk to them, you know, but it's not to talk to them to listen to them. It's to talk to them to check a box and say, we did that. Right. We talked to them, you know, and nothing sustainable has been done. You know, I think sustainability has to be part of this conversation too. Mm-hmm. And Amelia, I know we talked about that with the project that we're working on, mm-hmm. The Make It Make Sense grant that WGTE and Reinvest Toledo is working on. It's a, you know, in short, it's a grant where we're going to be, you know, identifying people to intern at WGTE mm-hmm. and teach them skills to become storytellers and tell the stories of their communities, you know, and there's a couple other facets of the project, but is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Should that just be the project? You know, and if we're thinking about something that's sustainable, it probably shouldn't just be that. It needs to be like, okay, we can't just be like, we just open the door and then the door's closed. We got mm-hmm. the grant money and we just all move on. What happens after that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think there's been talk in this project about those students being able to, or those interns being able to go on to Owens Community College, and whatever time they did here at WGTE, they'll be that can be equated to a certain amount of credit hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beginning of that sustainability, you know, and that also goes back into leadership too. You know, I think leadership can easily be a multifaceted conversation. You know, you have to first be in the position to hold the door open. But at the same time, you don't just hold the door open. You need to see what's happening after they go through the door,
mm-hmm.
you know, and make sure you're part of that relationship, too. And making sure that you're saying, you know, don't do this, do this, you know, yes, do, you know, that kind of thing. Like, be part of that conversation and this whole sustainability aspect of leadership, too. So, like I said, I don't know if that.
No, that definitely does, because I think it's that follow up piece, right?
Yeah.
And how, you know, you didn't just check the box, right, to say that, you know, I met this outcome and things like that, but I'm also ensuring that what we are set out to do, the change that we're looking to make, I'm also wanting to, you know, just ensure that and, you know, being a helping aid into that. In my own journey, you know, working in workforce development, that was something that, you know, I was just always, you know, really adamant on. And like, yes, I know my job really was just to get them through the trade and things like that. But, you know, when I have to think about, well, they did this trade to get a job and things like, you know, I don't want them to have to go back to those same things just because they are feeling like, you know, they kind of wasted their time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the program kind of just spit them out.
Yeah.
Because then it's not that you can't really count that as effective.
Can I just jump in quick? Just I want to circle back to something that was said about bringing people to the table. I think that given the current state of our world, we are beyond bringing people to the table. Now it's time to create our own tables. And that is what RT really is about, right? We're creating tables, and people are beginning to understand their value. Because, yes, Marcus is absolutely correct. People will show up and check the box. They come up, they show up and check the box because they understand there's value in that community, and they need that to validate their work. Community needs to understand you have the power. And if it's going to be a you're coming to our community, it needs to be mutually beneficial. And so RT really is about helping community understand that, yes, you can invite them to the table, but how does it benefit your community? Because don't give your power away. Because clearly there is power, right? And we have to be able to recognize that and negotiate that in a way that has systemic change, right? Because that's all tied to our health, our mental health, right? And I see you ready to say something. So
no, because I was going to say, I've been reflecting on this, right, as far as like building the table and things like that, because I know there is purpose, right, in being Black. And, you know, I believe in, like, you know, creating these safe spaces so we can just have that safe space to be able to be ourselves and be able to prosper as we work for. But I don't want to build this table alone, right? And so I'm definitely like, I want to bring a dish to somebody's table. Like, let me bring what I have to somebody's table and let's help, you know, we build this together. Because maybe I'm still making a chair here and there and things like that to pull up to my table. But I guess I'm at that stage that I'm like, I recognize that I need that training, that I you know, have reached out to Marcus for, you know, mentorship on things. And I was even reflecting on, you know, how getting that, you know, cross-sector mentoring has been able to, you know, transition me. And so I really want to learn more, you know, and how you are empowering those voices, especially like on in the Power Tour and the Raised Voices.
I mean, we could just talk about last year. I took a group of our community leaders attached to Reinvest and leadership under our coalition. We went to Dayton and we presented a workshop, Building Power from the Ground Up, at the Ohio Community Development Association, right? And the room was packed. Why was it packed? Because I didn't bring a slide, right? I brought people who talked about their experience, who were able to demonstrate how being involved in this coalition has given them the confidence to elevate their voices around issues that matter to them. So we've been invited back to go to Athens to do the same thing in September. Why? Because people want to hear from people. And I'm not saying you should not ever go to other tables, but you need to go to those tables being seen as an equitable stakeholder. Like, that's the issue. And when you create your own table, first you gain that confidence so you can walk into that room where you are previously unwelcome and know that you have power and you have a place there. So that's the value of that home training and building your table at home first with confidence, so you can walk into that room and know that you're equitable. People don't have to tell you that.
But knowing your power, you have to know that before going into that room. How do you, and I want to again ask this to all of you, and how do you, you each have led teams, so instill that in others and in yourself?
I try to encourage. I think when there's someone that's in front of me and we're working through a solution or we're trying to find a solution, my first thought is, okay, tell me what you think. Walking, you know, instead of kind of telling that person what I think that they should do, I want to hear, what direction are you going in and where can I take that and how can we come to a solution to the larger problem in that way? It really helps to build someone and empowers them with their own thoughts and, okay, let's go with that. Let's see how that could work.
In teams that I've managed, I've found great success in watering people where they grow.
Yes.
You know, so what are your strengths? You know, and I tend to let people navigate towards that because I've found that we'll fill in the other gaps, or if I have to fill in the gate, we'll figure it out. But watering people where they grow and letting them kind of operate in that space, you know, I would rather have somebody that's very strong in a couple areas, you know, and need, you know, some assistance in other areas. And because who knows, the other person might be strong in those areas where one person is weak at, you know, so it's just team dynamics, understanding your team and understanding how to work with people, you know, I think is really key.
Absolutely. I definitely agree. Miss Amelia, we're going to get back to you in the next segment. We're running out of time in a little bit here, but I really appreciate each of you sharing your journeys that reflect that community development. And I also am thankful for our listeners, and I hope you guys stay with us into this next segment. Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. I'm still here with Marcus, Alexandria, and Amelia, and we're going to honestly just jump right back into where we left off and taking those grassroots ideas to those sustainable systems. Marcus made a really good point in, talking about, those follow-up factors of not just, stopping at the programs, but getting them involved in further programs or getting people involved in further programs to continue a journey to a sustainable living and health. I want to bring you both back into that point of, how those come about and what just the changes that you see in individuals. And let's start there.
I think we as leaders, we need to start thinking about what makes the biggest impact. We have to think about the whole person. Mm-hmm. We're talking about health equity. Social determinants of health came about because providing traditional health care wasn't enough anymore. When you're talking about the whole person, you can provide them medication and they can come to doctor's appointments. But if they're living on the street, they're going to continue to have contributing health factors because of that condition. If there's lack of income, if there's lack of access to transportation, their entire lives are going to be affected. And eventually their health is going to have a negative effect based on that. And I think that when we're looking at the whole person as leaders, we have to get creative with the solutions. And I loved what Marcus and Amelia were talking about when it came to the internship, because Owens got involved. So you advocate to get another entity involved. And so you have, while you have this internship, it transitions into credit hours. As someone that's swimming in student loan debt, that is a value to me. I hear that that's reflected back into something that will have a larger impact on my life, not only my career, but my finances. I'm paying less in student loans because I was able to have this opportunity. The same with housing, neighborhood properties. We own our properties, so we own 471 units all over Lucas County, and we provide various subsidies based on somebody's income. So they get rental assistance and rental support for the duration of their time with us. But that's not enough anymore. We need to provide more than that. We do have the supportive services, so the staff that will get out there and help that tenant or that individual sign up for different benefits, make sure they have health insurance, make sure that they have food. But what else? Who else are we going to work with to make sure that they have career opportunities? Not only do they have career opportunities, they have transportation to the career training and the career opportunities. It was something I advocated for in the community when we were talking about how to engage young people. There's a lot of hopelessness that's happening in our community based on what the opportunities that people may or may not have. So great, let's provide some career training for them. But how are they going to get to that? That transportation piece needs to come in. So we need to have various people at the table willing to provide solutions so that that person as a whole can really, we can make an impact on their life and they can thrive. Because when they thrive, our communities thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely having those cross sectors at the table is important. And I really want to kind of walk through that with you, Amelia and Marcus, with the Make It Make Sense grant. I know you kind of started that off as like a town hall and bringing people together. So where did you guys, kind of find that collaboration and bringing on partnerships like Owens? How did you find that, and how did you like walk us through that, and how you that came about?
Would you like to go first?
Yeah. And let me just say,
and then I will jump in.
Let me just say for the record, though, too, Owens wasn't original. They haven't officially come on to that. This is something that they did reach out to us about, because they saw value in the project, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. Just piggybacking off what Alexander was just saying, I think that's key. you know, mm-hmm. multiple organizations seeing value in the project. Where do we fit in this puzzle? Because mm-hmm. there is a space where you could fit, you mm-hmm. know, like you were saying, the transportation. Mm-hmm. There's a piece for all of us, you mm-hmm. know, in a lot of these projects. And, you know, people just need to – the organizations just need to see the value, you know, in them. So backing up to the Make It Make Sense project, basically WGTE is working with Reinvest Toledo, and we're going to identify – and a couple Monsey, was it?
Peace in Motion.
Yeah, Monsey, Peace in Motion. I can't remember what – what is the acronym?
The Mayor's Initiative on Safety Engagement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. Sorry. Sorry for anybody in Monsey that's listening. no, but it's important to have them involved too. So they're involved to help us identify who are the interns. And then another part of the project is, so those interns are going to be coming to WGT. We're going to give them experience doing production, you know, production work. So they're going to be here for 40 hours. We're going to give them, you know, experience doing production. They're going to learn how to run cameras, the inner workings of doing a actual video production. They're going to help us produce town halls where we're engaging these neighborhoods. So Reinvest Toledo, that's the space that they're going to live in. Great. In terms of this project, they're going to engage these neighborhoods and help us decide where are we going to be doing these town halls at? What are we going to be talking about? You know, what's important to these neighborhoods? You know, the interns are going to help us produce the town halls, you know, but they're also going to be they're also going to learn how to tell their stories, you know, how to tell their narrative. So alongside, it's a lot of layers to this mm-hmm. onion, mm-hmm. but it's all good stuff. So they're also going to be working on little mini documentaries during this time, too, to kind of tell their own narrative or whatnot. But this just goes to show it's a multi-layered project where a lot of different organizations can fit, you know, mm-hmm. in and find value in everything that we're doing. I don't know if you want to jump in there.
I think that I would be remiss as a community activist if I did not talk about the macro level impact of this project. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Certainly the youth are the micro level. They're individuals. We're talking about the trajectory of their lives. But the purpose when we began to think about this, because there was a need after the new administration took office, everything started changing from a policy space. Mm-hmm. And I started making calls like, okay, who is talking to the community about SNAP? Who is talking to the community about, you know, all the things that are happening that impacts what they see when they walk out of the house, and there's no conversation happening anywhere. And so Make It Make Sense was exactly that. We need to make it make sense to the people who are being impacted the most. Mm-hmm. And so the town halls is our way to begin the macro attack, if you will, on making what's happening on a national level that trickles down, mm-hmm. making it make sense to people who are being impacted, right? Like we need to do that, because that's systemic change. We're attacking it in a way that people will elevate their voices and use their power. Like to me, certainly the micro level with the young people, because you know that's my thing, it's all about leadership. But if we don't collectively begin to attack this stuff and respond in a way that makes sense to us and we understand the value of it, then people will continue to make decisions for us because they are not hearing us. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about town halls and creating narratives. That's our way of taking the platforms that WGTE has available in this project and getting that information out to everyone who's being impacted, because it's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. It's just not happening. And shame on us, because our community would never flourish if everybody in the community is not engaged in this work a meaningful way.
That's right.
Yep. Exactly. That's how you're going to actually, you know, move that change forward in doing that work and getting the people involved. And I guess I'm curious into what you mentioned, you know, identifying those interns and things like that. What are you kind of, I guess, looking for in your leadership and like, you know, who are going to be positioning themselves at key stakeholders? Like, how do you identify those, or what kind of stands out when you identify those people?
Well, for Reinvest, because we are a coalition, we already have identified neighborhood leaders who are engaged in our work. And there are others who are coming on board because they see mm-hmm. the impact, right? Mm-hmm. And so it is important to me that when our young people begin to tell the narrative, they are able to see themselves. mm-hmm. right? Like, we can give them the camera, and that's great, and they will get it, and they'll know how to do this. But if they don't see themselves in mm-hmm. leadership roles, then they're not going to believe that they can be a leader. So mm-hmm. I think that this project is not it's not competing priorities. It's both are equally important to make the impact that we want, right? So leadership being visible, for them to understand that I can do this too, because I can point to somebody who's going to actually, who gets it, right? Mm-hmm. Who gets my story, and validating their story is equally important, mm-hmm. I think, in terms of making sure this program has the impact. And I'm just going to hit pause and say, I detest the word program, because in our community, we have been programmed to death. And it has a negative connotation.
Yes, I didn't like when I said it.
Something about it that I didn't like when I said it.
And I always, whatever time I have, I always say that, stop using that word, because it's saying, I'm going to put you in the program because there's something wrong with
that's
you.
Right. Right.
And I'm going to help you fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
we don't,
that's
what term do you prefer?
Services, opportunities.
Yes.
I mean, I'll come to an opportunity, but I'm not going to come to another program, because programs have failed us.
It's
that's
draining.
Exactly right.
Programs
I feel
drained.
Yes.
Yeah, like, oh, here we go.
Here go another
something
thing.
Something wrong with me. I'm going to have to go through a program.
Exactly.
Got to fill out an intake form.
And I think in our community, especially the individuals that may best benefit from services, mm-hmm. are always given the biggest burden from the programs,
yep.
because we got outcomes to meet and we have things we have to do. So I'm going to be speaking from the housing perspective. I'm coming to your unit this many times to fill out this paperwork. You got to fill out this packet. We got to get it to this person. It's their burden is always placed on the person that
yes.
needs it the most.
Absolutely.
And I back that up 100% that offering opportunities and the way we change our language not only brings people to the table that will most benefit from it, but then teaches other services and other programs, other opportunities. it really advocates. It advocates in a way that I think we have to collectively attach ourselves to.
I think when you frame it like that, you put it in the opportunity aspect, it does start making you think about how do we streamline, those things. Because mm-hmm. like you said, I definitely have seen that mm-hmm. Just throughout mm-hmm. being consistent almost mm-hmm. throughout the healthcare system. And it's disheartening, because that's what, mm-hmm. Creates the barriers that we're trying to help them overcome.
When the Wellness Center was kind of out in the community and we were talking about emotional support and mental health, people always said mental health issues. They would say issue. And I took issue with the issues. Word issue.
Yeah.
I said challenge. I would say a challenge, or I would just change the language that we're using, because we really want to give dignity to the individual that we're trying to serve. Now, I admit, and I think we all know this, we have to do what we have to do. So especially with housing, we're going to have to get these packets filled out and these documents filled out. And there is a burdensome component to it. But I agree 100% that we just have to change the way we use our language and the way that we view it. Because, again, we're here to serve that person, not us and not our program and not the, I don't want to say that, not the funders. But you know what? The funders are here to serve the person as well.
Wouldn't it be amazing, though, if we had individuals, neighborhood leaders, people who understood and had the lived experience, were those people at the table when you're ready to create this packet? If they could say, you know what, really? No. We just know it's mm-hmm. not going to work, because no one wants to do it. If I got to tell you all my business on paper, right?
And that dignity is what helps them stay the course, right? That's
right.
What's going to help them, go off and carry on that
yep.
service, right? And I think that leads to that sustainability. So not just, stopping at, us leading the way, but beyond you. And you touched on it a little bit about earlier about that intergenerational
leadership.
Yes. Give us more insight in what that looks like to you. And I actually kind of would like to hear just everybody's perspective in what they would like to see that come to fruition in our community.
Well, for me, really briefly, intergenerational leadership says that people who are leading are also helping the new leaders to mm-hmm. assimilate, mm-hmm. right? It's like you are not waiting until you're done. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to teach you and show you how to lead while I'm leading, mm-hmm. because now it's you are a practitioner in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So that's defining it for me.
I just want to comment on some key words that I keep hearing. And it's a couple things that I let kind of run my leadership and things that I you know, where I lead at and spaces where I lead at. Two words that I keep hearing is leadership and service. Mm-hmm. So I am a big believer in servant leadership. Leadership is service. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. You mm-hmm. know, you lead by serving others. I once heard a quote where it said, if service is beneath you, then leadership is beyond you. Mm-hmm. You know, and that has always resonated with me. I believe in serving others. You know, I'm very involved civically and serve on a bunch of different boards. And, you know, a lot of people are like, how do you know all these people? You know, so many. And I'm like, well, I've served mm-hmm. a lot of people.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, and I believe that's where leadership really lives at, you know, is in service. Even my team here, I make sure they have what they need to be them their best selves. You know, if that's advice, if that's, you know, their input, you know, my input, whatever it is, you know. So I just want to comment and say that, you know, mm-hmm. that leadership to me equals service. When it comes to, you know, intergenerational leadership, I think Amelia hit it right on the head. It's bringing on the next wave of leadership. It's holding the door open, saying, you know, follow me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not saying that I am the end all, mm-hmm. you know, but here it is. You know, and I'm holding the door open
for
you.
Put your people on.
Yeah, absolutely. Making sure they have what they need, you know, to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that when I hear intergenerational leadership, the first person I think of is my mom. And I want to so much to not only lead in my field and in my career, but I want to be examples for others and what a leader can look like for them. So maybe you aren't the director at your organization, but you're the leader in your home. And what mm-hmm. you do in your home directly impacts how, if there's children in that home, live and thrive in the community and the opportunities they may have further on. You know, I always immediately think of my mother, because while she wasn't, you know, a director at her organization, she showed me what ambition and hard work was like. And I took that and I was able to accomplish what I'm accomplishing. So what am I going to do, not only in my career, but how am I going to expose others to what leadership looks like and how I learned it and how they can learn it and how they can visualize it? I think sometimes people see leadership as something very narrow. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, and it's not narrow at all. And there's so many opportunities, and it will the umbrella of that and the domino effect in our community can really make a difference.
Absolutely. I agree with everything that you guys said. I appreciate you guys all joining us today to just be able to unpack the initiative of health equity being a continuous commitment to transforming the conditions that shape how we live, grow, and thrive. And leadership is definitely a part of that. Throughout this conversation, we've been able to discuss that and neighborhood investments and what that community-driven action really looks like. I appreciate you guys joining me here today for a moment of truth, and I appreciate our listeners. Until we meet again, take care of yourselves, family.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.